I don't think he did. That's a very interesting question for other reasons. For example, he did know Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. He toured with her, and his family lived next door to her family in the Bronx. So there's a very definite connection there. She actually mentions him in her autobiography. But the other question was, did he have any knowledge or awareness of Joe Hill? And since the Songs of Freedom was actually published before the IWW songbook, the question is sort of like, how much did the IWW influence Connolly and vice versa? I suspect that because of the IWW's history as a singing union, and they'd obviously been doing this for long before they actually published that songbook, which is also available over there, in 1911, my guess is that there was just a lot of back and forth. And I think the other interesting thing about Connolly and his relationship to the American labor movement and this, as I say, multilingual, multinational working class that he encountered was that it's definitely known that in the tradition that he grew up in Scotland in particular, the labor movement was very serious. You know, people would come to meetings and they would meet and they would plan their strategy for organizing. And there was sort of a division between going to the pub and singing and the solemnity of the struggle. And that's something that he really sought to break down. And I'm sure that he was inspired by this kind of singing union that the IWW had as their, you know, their reputation. I mean, it's quite clear in terms of the sequence. He himself was not so interested in, like, let's say, tradition or, you know, being, quote, Irish in terms of music. In fact, he used music that he found that the workers were singing, whether they were Scottish popular tunes or whatever. Tradition really had no role in it. And this is also a link to Joe Hill. You know, he took whatever. He made, you know, the Sweet By and By, a Christian hymn, into a revolutionary piece. So this, again, I think those connections must have been happening, if you understand what I mean. Whether or not he actually met Joe Hill, I don't know.
Oh, I asked about Mother Jones.
I know, but it's unlikely that he met Mother Jones, actually. If you look at the sequence of the time and where he was, but it is possible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry.
Well, I'm not sure what my question is, except why have I never heard these songs before? The Irish Revolutionary songs that I that I grew up with were all the Clancy Brothers stuff about heroic martyrs and let's go blow up something or go march out and shoot somebody and then we can have a heroic martyr song. And these are so different.
Yeah, in terms of, well, that's true. I mean, that's part of his, you know, his contribution as a socialist, as a labor leader. Obviously, he was emphasizing the working class. And, you know, of course, there's a long tradition of revolutionary songs that are nationalistic in the sense of Irish independence, in the sense of the Irish people rebelling against the British. There's a long history of that.
But these are like about building something, not about dying heroically.
That's true. And I think that's the socialist element. I mean, you have to consider that was one of the really significant things about what Connolly brought to Ireland, actually. And in that sense, his reference to William Thompson, who was one of the original Irish socialists who wrote a number of great tracts about socialism, specifically in Ireland, but was never, you know, he was not well known outside of his own limited circles. Connolly refers to him as being the first Irish socialist. But in fact, I think in practical terms, organizing a political party, organizing workers into the Irish General and Transport Workers Union with Jim Larkin and the great lockout of 1913, he was really the first. First, I mean, what does that mean? I mean, in other words, he was at the focal point of bringing socialism to Ireland. And prior to that, I mean, whether you go back to 1798 with Theobald Wolfe Tone or Robert Emmet or all the other great Irish heroes, they were in a certain sense, locked in the struggle with the British Crown and with imperialism, and we're simply seeking to free Ireland from those chains, but there wasn't necessarily a social vision of how to change that, you know, or what it would be replaced by, I should say. Just independence. And I think that that goes along with the martyrdom and the heroic fighting and dying for the cause.
These songs seem so upbeat and anticipating the change in a few more years.
Well, some of that's because of the music we put to it. I mean, you know, not to toot my own horn, but we were trying to capture what we thought was the spirit that's contained in the lyrics. What it seemed to us represented the emotion, the feeling of what he was saying, at least as we interpreted it, and also from the standpoint of singability, which was the real challenge, because the words are hard to get, and to be able to sing along or join in is not that easy, but to make the melody simple enough but interesting enough so that they're not just sloganeering, correct but not very interesting artistically, that's always the challenge, to try to do that. And I don't really know, you know, when I think about some of the songs that we did discover or we found out about later, whether we did any better than the original, because they're very militant. The Watchword of Labor, for example, is a very militant song, but it sounds more like the Marseillaise or the Internationale. It's a different kind of harmonic structure. And of course, we wanted people to dance. Get up, move. You know, that's the idea behind it.
Well, that was anticipating my next question, was do people get up and dance?
Well, you know, we've only been able to play with the band under special circumstances, because it's quite expensive to move music, 7 or 8 or 9 people around, and that's a real limitation. But when we have played with the group, I think people are certainly tapping their toes. Yep.
So you've brought a wonderful example of what music brings to a movement. And as you're traveling around, you're finding other people using music and they're organizing, or can you point us to other people that are doing this kind of thing, historic or current?
I think there's a lot of people doing it. I'm trying to think of specific individuals. I mean, I think there's so many musicians now that actually, whether they're organizing or not, they're singing songs that are relevant to current struggles, certainly. I mean, in many genres, from rap music to folk music, you know, I can't make a long list of different people. But when we've traveled, for example, in England and Ireland, talking to people, I mean, you mentioned Christy Moore. There are people like of his generation that are still actively singing songs and supporting political causes through their efforts. Certainly in England and Scotland and whatever, I encountered people who were, they may not be well known here, but who are singing songs. In fact, one interesting example of what we hope will happen with this whole project was that the young man who opened for us, the full band in Derry in Northern Ireland, was singing his own compositions that were very political. But at the end of the concert, he said, "Look, I really want to do that song, and now that I've got the songbook, I think I'm going to write music to this lyric, because we didn't, and so that's how we hope the thing will, you know, inspire." I don't know if that's really answering your question, but it's kind of like to give you a detailed list of all the people that I know that are doing political. It there's a lot of people, you know, and certainly we're in Switzerland. There are political rappers. There are people that are doing music that's connected to, you know, struggles that are going on there. Yeah. She didn't get a chance. Go ahead.
Yeah, just to add to that, a little information about some of the music, political music and dance things that I know of nowadays. Let's see, Billion Women Rising had a dance jam at the Capitol. And then the Idle No More movement against the Keystone Pipeline. We had, with Occupy Sacramento, we had a Native dance and drum circle. So, people are bringing music into the political action, you know.
Thank you.
If I may make so bold, this weekend, actually starting tomorrow, is the Western Workers Labour Heritage Festival, which is a full weekend of workshops and concerts of events, which were explicitly, as the name suggests, Western Workers Labour Heritage, is all about the use of art, culture, song in labour struggle. It's, if you just Google Western Workers, Western Workers Labour Heritage, it's actually in the Machinists Hall in Burlingame, which is just south of San Francisco. But it actually starts tomorrow evening and goes all weekend. Western Workers Labour Heritage.
Wonderful song circles.
Have you ever considered collecting a songbook consisting of songs of artists that have been executed or murdered, like Farah?
Mm-hmm.
And Connolly and many others.
Well, that's an interesting way to link it up. I mean, in other words, if you mentioned Joe Hill, James Connolly, Hata, and so on, it's a bit, it might be in a way unfair to all the people who didn't have that happen to them and wrote great songs. I mean, I think to take the question seriously, though, I mean, I think it is important to commemorate these people who actually did their work and were in some ways such a threat,
that's exactly
actually it called down the forces of the state upon them. That's a valid criteria in a certain sense. But I must say that's not specifically why we chose Connolly. It was for the substance of what he had to offer to us today.
I think he makes a good point, though, because I don't think the average person understands how many hundreds of people were killed just to get an 8-hour work day and fight the labor struggles of the late 1800s and early 1900s. I don't think most people have a clue. It's just not taught hardly at all.
Well, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's why we're doing this.
So there's a lot of people that lost their lives, including artists and poets. And
sure.
Yeah, worldwide.
Yes, that's true. Yep.
I want to compliment you on music writing for the melody writing for the festive song. That song you opened with is very well done. I mean, one of the things that you complained that there was that a lot of this was a mouthful, and it reminded me of the words are a mouthful, and it reminded me a little bit of the music and or the lyrics of Bruce Springsteen and how he loads lyrics and to the point where. A friend of mine who first introduced me to him ages ago said he calls him marble mouth because you can't understand what he's singing, you know. And one of the points of singing, and this was something that Pete Seeger did on television of all places, was to, you know, popularize singing just, you know, folk music and protest songs and so on. And there were parts, I mean, of the music where I felt like I could almost join in, mm-hmm. but there's this kind of popularization of music where we become so maybe mentally lazy that we want something that's just repetitive and easier than it should be to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of wondering, one of the things I'm looking at is trying to find media that help people come together and mm-hmm. communicate to each other and ritualize this a little bit, you know, in song and dance but to be able to sing together, you know. And do you see us going in that direction at all? I mean, I almost feel like I have to reinvent the wheel to be able to come up with some good lyrics and song, you know, and melodies and such.
Well, answer that in two ways. One thing that I was struck by myself, and I think others have noted, is that these songs were actually at least appreciated and heard by the laboring masses. They were not for a select group of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I made the point about the rebel song being actually sung by workers in
right.
Glasgow and so on. So the literary level of these supposedly illiterate, downtrodden masses must have been fairly high for them to understand what these songs were about. And so I think one of the big problems with the whole thing about simplicity is if you actually think people are simple,
mm-hmm.
if you think people are stupid, if you think people are dumb, then of course you start dumbing everything down, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say, well, we want to include everybody. We want everybody to join in, so we don't want to leave anybody out. But that's a presumption that is often false, that actually the way you include people is precisely to elevate their level and to speak to them on the highest possible level rather than the lowest. And I don't mean to make something, you know, rocket science when it's really simple,
right.
but it does mean that you're not talking baby talk to you know, somebody because you think they're going to be left out or something like that. That's first about the question of lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's actually confirmed when you hear some popular music today, including the best rap songs or whatever, that are highly poetic and extremely rapid-fire lyrics, hard to understand at first listen and so on and so forth, but highly intelligent and in many cases radical. So it's certainly possible to imagine today whatever form it happens to take. But the other thing I think that is important is that there can't be any doubt that the way the music industry has functioned and the way you could say the whole culture industry has functioned is to dissuade people from participating in the activity of making art, and that really has to be a cornerstone of any sort of transformation in the world. If we're going to have a revolution, it's because people are going to make it themselves, and that begins with singing songs.
Mm-hmm.
Or clapping your hands, or doing something, whatever art form you want to, you feel driven to participate in. I think this is really fundamental because we have definitely been broken off from that in the last, say, 30 or 40 years after the 60s. And so you to reintroduce that at whatever level, with 2-year-olds or 20-year-olds or 50-year-olds, it doesn't really matter. At some point, you have to reintroduce this process of participating in making things, not necessarily for an audience, not necessarily as a profession or pursuing a career, mm-hmm. but simply to learn how to do it again.
Well, in creation of community.
Yes, that's right.
You know, really, I mean, that's, you know, whether it's a community in our neighborhood or where we work or, you know, where we play or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Could we sing a song together and create community?
Is there something? Yeah, is there something we could kind of that might have a chorus that we
can
kind of grasp quickly?
I don't know about one of Connolly's songs.
Okay.
They're pretty hard for people to sing. It's hard for us to sing. But there are other songs.
Step by Step.
No.
I like that Wickers song. I was starting to get into that.
Well, we can sing some more songs. But are there any other questions, or just to make sure that.
That's a question, right.
Okay, we don't necessarily have to confine it to these songs, but that's what we came to sing, and if everybody's already bought the CD, then they'll sing another repertoire.
Here's a place to put your jacket.
Oh, this is fine, thank you. Oh, yes. This is a song that, again, there was no music to. It's the only song that contains Irish, the language of Irish. It's called Saoirse Ruin, which means cherished freedom. And Alan Burke, a dear friend of ours and one of the key participants in the project, wrote the music. This is Saoirse Ruin.
And
Thou Savior yet to be, Seer Sharon. Dearer than life to me, Seer Sharon.
Travel past Cicero, long held in bondage fast Cicero. Weary the road we've passed, by error's clouds overcast, thy light breaks in at last Cicero.
Thank you. thou knowest, long has labor grown, a robbed and beaten bride. Whilst capital on the high and throne, reign Lord and Lord. But time rolled on, and earth and sky, new powers to marry thee. And science echoes labor's cry, King Capital must be. At last must yield, at last must yield, King Capital at last.
lots of songs in the Songs of Freedom about flags and banners and what have you. And we tried to select as broad a range as possible in terms of the lyrical content, because that's not all that Connolly wrote about it. Nevertheless, this is a song called Shake Out Your Banners. Come shake out your banners and forth to the fight. Joy, joy to a heart that this day we have seen. When the war flags of labor salute in the light, freedom for mankind around us all stream. Oh, the tyrants made great less the blood they have poured over the fields of the earth, their crowns to be jailed. May rise to one thought, sets the unsheathed the sword, and harden our hearts against the spoilers.
Shake out your banners.
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 I the sword glitters grandly, but not as of yore. When brothers go to war in murderous feud, or the nod of a tyrant rush nations to war, and the hopes of our race grow overwhelming good. Nay, the fight that we find is a fight for our own, and freedom for labor our war's tocsin shall be. Till the broad earth resounded, till capitals throne lies shattered for aye in the toilers.
Shake out your banners.
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 Shake out your
banners.
Shake out your banners.
One that actually a lot of people probably have heard, and it's called The Red Flag. This was written by Jim Connell, not James Connolly, but obviously it was of great inspiration to Connolly because he included it in the original Songs of Freedom. The funny thing is that when we started to work on this song, which of course we had the music to, the Swiss members of the group had real trouble singing it because it's to O Tannenbaum. And so to sing a song of this type to that melody was real difficult. So we had to actually make a real effort to modify the music, and with the aid of Yvonne's special talents, give it a Motown feel. This is called The Red Flag.
Keep the red flag flying here, oh yeah.
We have time for one more, and this is the one that I mentioned. I had a woman come and sing it to me, the original version, but this is what we came up with. It's called The Watchword of Labor. Watchword of labor, the slogan of they who'd be free, that no more to any enslaver must labor bend supply and need. That we on whose shoulders are born, of bomb and the bite of the grain, whose toil they repay with this scorn, must challenge and master our fate. Then send it aloft on the breeze, boys, that watchword the grandest we've known, that labor must rise from its knees, boys, and train the broad earth as its own. I, we grew up one by our power, empire for our rulers and lords, yet dealt in a basement and swallowed things we had made by our swords. Now battle with birds will be bending, we're answering labor's command. Rise from our knees and descending in manhood for freedom takes stand. Then send it aloft on the breeze, boys, that watchword the grandest we've known, that labor must rise from its knees, boys, and paint the broader that's its own. Despising their wrath and their pity, we workers are moving in line to answer the watchword and token that labor gives forth as its own. Nor pause till our fetters we've broken and conquered the spider and throne. Then send it aloft on the breeze, boys, that watchword the firmest we know, that labor must rise from its knees, boys, and broader there's its own. Then send it aloft on the breeze, boys, that watchword the grandest we know, that labor must rise from its knees, boys, and bring the broader.
Are you a Marxist school regular?
Oh, Well, just occasionally. Gotta get over there when I can. What about you? Regular?
If you can call twice every 2 years, regular.
Well, you're not too regular. Sounds like my schedule.
But I'm Darian.
Darian, I'm Jack.
Rather interesting.